Good morning, everyone. I'll just open our meeting today with respect to ALJ Good. However, I do need to go out. I will confirm that the entire office is here today. I do need to adjourn close the meeting for about 3 minutes. I can do that.
Parties, the lawyers, analyze the law, apply the case. There's no suggestion that it's incorrect. It could be open. The judge could have done that. Even the chief judge, who did 17, that's good. Bonus evaluation. Even the chief judge's June 20th letter takes no position that that's good service. Nothing about that risk confession. That two opinions involve the risk. No complaints. He was against So I have to ask myself, what is it after this group work that came out of Chief Judge Dennis 45 years ago in Austin? To share an office for 9 months. What is it that after 25 years, I'm sorry, you're up, is your microphone on?
It is now. Thank you. So what is it after 25 years that made the chief judge suddenly awaken like Rip Van Winkle and say, I see a lot of characterological issues that I hadn't seen before? I'm going to highlight just a few of the allegations that the chief judge made. They were largely based on anonymous claims by people who wouldn't sign their name, wouldn't come forth, so that nobody ever came to Judge Good and said, what do you have to think about that? Notwithstanding the promise, and that's memorialized in Exhibit 5A from Ms. Natale, that at some point in time they would come to Judge Good and ask him, what do you have to say about that? Nobody ever came to say, well, what about this allegation? What do you have to say? We tried to address every one of them, every material one of them, in the chief judge's 38-page single-space letter. We provided a double-space 40-page or so response. Let me tell you a few of them, if you will. Let me begin with former Chief Judge Tyrone Butler's statement that alleged, where Judge Good is alleged to have said a comment that he wasn't let him find his own relationship with the city council. That was 12 years ago. Judge Gert was supported for reappointment by Chief Judge Butler. Nobody seems to have addressed that. So why are they relying on that? Let me take one that is just beyond the pale ridiculous. There was a day when Jess Good wrote an amusing email to former Chief Judge, Acting Chief Judge Wanda Tucker, who is here today, and who has written a letter of support for Judge Good. And he suggested in levity, maybe everybody here should have a North Korean-style haircut, because he'd read in the paper about how the North Korean government wants to have people have regulation-style haircut. The Chief Judge takes issue with that and says, for that email, he should be denied reappointment. But nobody ever bothered. Nobody, as if this should be taken seriously, but nobody ever looked to see former Chief Judge Tucker's reply, which was, you've made my day, I'm laughing out loud. An obvious spoof in 2014 should be grounds to hold up the reappointment of a terrific guy who's worked for the system for 12 years and given it all and worked for the D.C. government for 25 years. But there are several other ones. There's a very hurtful statement the chief judge attributes, after 25 years he's awoken like Rip Van Winkle, to the idea, to the notion, the theory that Jess Good discriminates against people of color. And I thought about that. To my right, Judge Good's right, is his wife of 19 years, Professor Tawara Good. To my left, former Acting Chief Judge Tucker, both proud African-American women. If they had sensed for one moment that there was a discriminatory bone in Jess Good's body, don't you think that would have come forth at some point? If somebody in history had ever thought of Jess Good as a bigot, at making personnel decisions based on race, wouldn't that have come forth over 25 years? You might examine a couple of the allegations that the chief judge made, perhaps his investigators made, and maybe just sign a letter one day. There's an allegation that in connection with Lewis Neal, Mr. Neal to my right, their relations, that Judge Good had engaged in some issue of discrimination. But Wanda Tucker stepped forward and said, please, what's this all about? Judge Good denies ever engaged in an act of discrimination. And what's the theory of discrimination? The theory of discrimination that's alleged by Chief Judge Adams is one that I submit that a judge in the Superior Court would seriously consider not well grounded in faith or good faith or reality. The allegation was that Mr. Neal, an African American man, was discriminated against when a white attorney was not retained. On its face, that's absurd. It just doesn't make any sense. It's something so uncharacteristically insensitive to think that the chief judge would make an allegation like that. Or there's an allegation that Jess Good somehow had something to do with the resignation of a woman named Sheree Cleckley. There's no allegation. Chief Judge Adams, by the way, doesn't claim any personal knowledge of any of these episodes. Judge Tucker, former Acting Chief Judge Tucker, has stepped forward and said, I was involved in the Cleckley episode and terminating her. That had nothing to do with Jess Good. So where does the chief judge suddenly infer that Jess Good has committed an act of discrimination against Sheree Cleckley? Or a gentleman named Joseph Harrison. That'll be the last example I want to use. Joseph Harrison apparently alleged at some point that he had been victimized by discriminatory acts because he wasn't given a pay raise. And evidently the chief judge decided in his discretion and perhaps prudence to give him a pay raise. Now, suddenly, Jess Good is accused of discrimination 3 years later by the chief judge, not by Mr. Harrison. Mr. Harrison's complaint, Ms. Natale was kind enough to send to me, says nothing whatsoever about Judge Good's involvement in that. But if Jess Good was a discriminator, if Jess Good had treated Joseph Harrison as a victim of invidious discrimination on the basis of his skin color, you think Chief Judge Adams would have had all those emails and text messages that we put in the record in Exhibit 5, those friendly, kind remarks, just you've made a classy move, just you're good, I really enjoy working with you. Would all of those text messages, would Chief Judge Adams have relied on the assistance of a bigot? Does that make any sense whatsoever? So I think the most surprising allegation made in the chief judge's letter was to analogize, in fact, I think if I could use his words, on point, quote unquote, this case to that of former administrative judge Roy Pearson. That's risible. That doesn't make any sense. Has anybody ever suggested that Jess Good sued somebody for $65 million over a pair of pants? Has anybody suggested that Jess Good ever did anything wrong in terms of how we handle cases, dispense justice? To the extent that the chief judge recognizes, and I believe this is a page 34, maybe it's 38 of his letter of June 20th, that there have been issues with Mary Oates Walker. There's still factions in the Office of Administrative Hearings. I want to address that. Really, it's time for the ghost of Mary Oates Walker to leave. It really needs to be exercised. But if I can make one thing clear to you, commissioners, Jess Good didn't drive Mary Oates Walker, former Chief Judge Walker, out of office. What drove Chief Judge Walker out of office was her own acts and practices, admitted ethics violations. There were 15 administrative law judges, not just Judge Good, 15 administrative law judges, including Judge Teal, who I understand the chief judge just and properly so recommended for reappointment, who stepped forward and signed a letter to the mayor saying there are real problems here. What led to Judge Walker's demise were her own acts and the acts of the mayor, the former mayor, Gray, who decided to fire her. Nobody's ever suggested that Vincent Gray is a tool of Jess Good. The fact that there may still, after all this time, be bad feelings on the part of some of the staff people, and maybe two of the administrative judges, including Judge McDonald, who still said Judge Good administers justice fairly, the fact there may still be some bad feelings, that's not a ground to deny Jess Good reappointment. In sum, before I ask if it's all right for my client to add a few words, the chief judge's recommendations are feathers. They're not a ton of feathers, because a ton of feathers would be a ton, but they're feathers. His recommendations are insubstantial. Jess Good, through his 12 years of service, has earned the right, well, not, has earned the your vote in favor of his reappointment, because his service has been peerless, his colleagues recognize that, and because there's no reason, no legitimate reason, much less a substantial reason, to deny reappointment. And with your permission, unless you have questions of me, I'd like to ask if Judge Good could speak for himself for a moment or two.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Can Jess Good be sworn in, please?
Yes. So my name is Jess Good. I appreciate this opportunity to talk. I admit to just being confused as to what's happened over the last couple of years that would result in Chief Judge Adams' decision. I certainly recognize that, like everyone, I'm not perfect. I have imperfections, and I try to be conscious of those. And I try to take responsibility. Well, I do take responsibility for my behavior and how I treat people. I don't recognize myself in the chief's June 20th letter, the idea that I'm a bully, that I'm intemperate, mean, unfair, someone who discriminates. I don't believe those characteristics describe me. For over a quarter of a century, as you've heard, back to when he and I shared an office, the chief judge and I have had a collegial working relationship. I mean, he was actually there when I got the call that my wife went into labor with the birth of our son. I've read his letter, I've reread his letter, meaning the June 20th letter, literally gone over it line by line, and I just find myself perplexed and bewildered by his comments. It's like one day, despite all our interactions, he woke up and discovered there were character flaws that he hadn't seen before, that were these deep, terrible character flaws, but he just somehow never knew that I was like this. I think we've demonstrated that the chief judge lacks personal knowledge of the charges against me, that there are inaccurate statements in the June 20th letter where he attributes to me things that I didn't do, and that the ones that aren't inaccurate are taken far out of context. I sincerely regret that my work over the years has angered some of my colleagues, including Chief Judge Adams. That's never been my intent. And I've been conscious of the fact that with struggles during former Chief Walker's tenure and over implementing creating the union, I've been conscious of the fact that people have been angry, that there's been resentment. And I've tried to convert that into a cornerstone of support for the reforms of Acting Chief Judge Tucker and now Chief Administrative Law Judge Adams. I mean, I think a good example of that was my February 11th, 2016 email to all the ALJs, where I asked everyone to work beyond the divisions of the past. I also hope that a positive sign of my efforts is that a majority of my colleagues have supported my reappointment based on their firsthand knowledge of my work as an ALJ, and that I have been twice elected union president. I also find hope in the fact that when he opposed my reappointment, the chief judge didn't identify any negative exchanges between he and I. If this body honors me with reappointment, I commit to meeting with Chief Judge Adams and cooperating with him to ensure that we're able to work professionally together for the betterment of OAH and the citizens of the District of Columbia, as we have in the past. It does not help me or OAH for these struggles and disputes to continue. I promise to continue working to heal the fractured relationships at OAH. I consider it a great honor to be an administrative law judge and to serve the public, and I hope you'll look favorably on my request for reappointment.
Oh, here we go. So my reading of the letter from the chief judge, I don't think this is Chief Judge Adams' personal decision. Like, it's like a personal offense to him. And you both have talked about this 25-year friendship. I don't know that Chief Judge Adams doesn't still consider you a friend. However, in his capacity as the chief judge, you are not, obviously, you're not the only judge for whom he's responsible for overseeing. There's multiple individuals here, lawyers, assistants, judges, that all of whom the chief is responsible for overseeing and making sure this is a workplace in which everyone can do well and prosper, because when everyone in the office does well and prospers, that's what's best for the citizens of the District of Columbia. What I get from the chief's letter is that while it is true, from what I understand, in terms of sort of getting opinions done, getting them done timely, getting them done thoroughly, all of that is done effectively, and I think that that's great. However, there seems to be, and I will hear from you, Judge Good, or whomever you have who wants to additionally comment, there seems to be, you don't seem to have any issue with the people who agree with your position. If they agree with you, then everything is great. But at any time there is a dissension, there's a disagreement, it just seems to me that is when your response seems to be just sort of beyond the pale. And I have to tell you, and I will just be in straight candor, this email that you sent to Judge Yonner, I don't know what the history is between you and Judge Yonner, but clearly there's a history as evidenced in the email exchanges that I have gotten over the past few years, particularly with the respect to the Yonner disciplinary matter that the cost had to deal with a few years ago. And then the email that you sent to her post the cost sending a decision, I'm not even talking about what actually happened during the meeting, but it's just a level of vitriol that it just seems that you would send to a colleague. Like, that if you're sending that to a colleague, what are you sending to the people who work for you? And so that's my concern. So if you could address that in terms of, and perhaps you didn't mean for vitriol to come off the page, I'm not sure, but that's what I read when that email came through. That's, and it just, I think it's the email, it's government's, OAH's exhibit, I don't know what this is, F, a second F, F2. And it's just not, and then the emails get sent to everyone in the office, and so everyone in the office sees this sort of vitriolic response that you give to Judge Yonner, and so how does that impact your colleagues? How does that impact the people who work for you when they know that you will respond like that based upon a decision that you don't like? That's basically just response to something that you just, something happened that you didn't like and you didn't agree with. And so that's my concern. So I'll hear from you, counsel or Judge Good, on that concern. So it's not so much your work product, which, you know, is wonderful. It's the professionalism and collegiality that is within the Office of Administrative Hearings that seems to be the import of the Chief Judge's concerns and that I that the cost is being tasked with addressing.
Mr. Ball, Your Honor, I'll, if you would, let me lead off of that.
Please, thank you.
Thank you for recognizing his wonderful service. If the interaction with Judge Yonner, which occurred in the aftermath of a rather spirited exchange between her and Judge Tucker, which is all part of the record here, was all that much, if it was all that, if it meant all that much, is all that destructive to the office, where's the record of it? What the record of it is the chief judge writing Judge Yonner an email later suggesting, a little birdie told me that there should be, that's his words, a little birdie told me that perhaps, you know, I ought to you talk to your sly sense of humor and try to effect a reconciliation. This is the idea that one isolated episode suggest a pattern that doesn't appear anywhere in the performance evaluations over the years from 2005 up through April of 2016. The chief judge is well aware of that interaction, and he wrote that wonderful letter about Jess Good extolling his service in April of 2016. Actions speak louder than words. If he really felt that the relationship with Ann Yonner, which arose clearly in the aftermath of the Mary Oates Walker situation. She's testified that several times on his behalf. If that was something that was all that important, he could have done something about it, like write Jess a memorandum saying, this can't happen again. I don't want anything like this occurring. Nothing like that occurs. There's no record of that. The letter from the email that Judge Good wrote to Judge Yonner also said something I think is pretty important. He said, I don't take any comfort in writing this. He's trying to affect a little bit of a reconciliation there. So the fact that they didn't...
I'm sorry, which email are you talking about?
There was an email that Judge Good wrote to Judge Yonner and said that...
What's the date on that email? Is that an exhibit?
It's in our pre-hearing memorandum. A pre-hearing memorandum, page 27 to 29, talks about the relationship between Judge Yonner and Judge Good. And the email itself is quoted in full on page 30. It's September 27, 2014. It's Exhibit 4D.
September 27, 2014?
Yes, ma'am.
The problem is the email to which I'm referring is October 31st, 2014. So it postdated that letter of alleged apology. That's what I'm, so, you see?
Still, mm-hmm. And I'm going to let Judge Good address that in a moment, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
There is no suggestion from the chief judge that in October 2014, November 2014, December 2014, anytime, he went into Jessica's office, said, "What's going on with you and Your Honor? You've got to stop this. This relationship has got to gel. It's got to be good." His email, chief judge's email to Judge Your Honor, as I point out, says, "I'm trying to effect a reconciliation. Can't we all talk?" So that's not this one, this court. That's another one that the chief judge wrote to Judge Your Honor. I'll cite that for you. And
Chief Judge Adams?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And he said to her, "A little birdie told me that there should be some reconciliation. There's an effort to try to work things out. I know, Judge Honor, but you have a sly sense of humor. Can't we all talk?" Where is the evidence that Jess Good's relationship with Judge Honor has destroyed the office? That's an isolated episode. That's an isolated event with an email that he wrote to Judge Honor and that nobody seems to have taken as grounds. They could have, if it was all that important to the chief judge, he could have referred him over under the collective bargaining agreement, which provides for disciplinary action against the judge if you've stepped out of line. So the fact that Judge Good had an interoffice dispute or dialogue with Judge Honor, is that a reason standing alone after all these years to say, all these years of wonderful service to say you shouldn't be reappointed? Nobody's perfect, as Judge Good just said to you. Nobody's perfect. We all have interaction with people every day, and sometimes people get up on the wrong side of the bed. Sometimes people just don't always get along. But that's a one-off incident. But I'd like to let Judge Good talk to you about that.
Well, Judge Honor and I have had difficulties over the past. I mean, it's true. She knows it. I know it. After that incident, I went in. I apologized to her. We shook hands, agreed we were going to let the past be behind us and just move forward for the good of the office. And there hasn't been a negative or inappropriate exchange since then. So I did. I was frustrated that day. I agree. But it is a one-off. There's not other emails like that. There's not other frustrated, you know, what you think, or I forgot your exact word, but essentially inappropriate emails like that. I mean, I don't know what to say. It was a one time. We've had problems. We agreed to let it behind us. And that's the point I think Mr. LaCara is referring to about the little birdie, is Chief Judge Adams recognized it's in the thing a couple of years later. Because I talked to him about the problems between me and Judge Yonner, talked to him about the problems, the divisions with Mary Oates Walker, the pro-Walker anti-union forces, and then the pro-union opposed to Mary Oates Walker group. We had a number of conversations about that. The February email that I referenced, I showed him before I sent it, told him what I was doing. He said, my memory is, I'm not trying to quote him exactly, it's too long ago, but my memory is he said something to the effect of, it's above and beyond the call of duty, that I didn't, in essence, I didn't need to do it. But, I mean, I hate to be judged by one, if you want to call it stupid email. It just, so.
No, I identified that particular email as an example of what could be viewed as problematic.
Yeah. Reference that I had, Your Honor, is Exhibit 5D. That's April, our pre-hearing submission, April of 2016.
Exhibit 5D?
Yes, R5D. That's an email from the Chief Judge to Judge Honor. Second page, and I quote for the record. "A little birdie once told me that Judge Good approached you about 10 months ago to try to mend any fences that may have been broken between you. Assuming his good faith in yours, mightn't he be surprised by your reaction to him becoming the chair?" Meaning the chair of an ethics committee. "I chide you good-naturedly not to irritate you or offend you, but only to gently ask if this is a real present concern for you. You know, Anne Yonner, Judge Yonner, is not completely, she's got her views, and she has her strong views as well. All the chief judge did was try to mediate, and he says, judge could try to work it out with you. So why is it all of a sudden that the chief judge decides after 25 years that Jess Good is this terrible person? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't think that the chief judge is insinuating or alleging that Judge Good is a terrible person. What I think that he is alleging, according to my understanding, and the chief can speak for himself, what it seems to me that he is alleging is that Judge Good presents a demeanor in the office, maybe perhaps not on the bench, but I'll just call it a demeanor in the office where people who work for him or work with him who are not judges, you know, separate and apart from Judge Honor, who perhaps may not be judges, but even perhaps judges as well, who feel intimidated, who feel condescended to, who don't feel as though they're being appreciated for the work that they're doing. And, you know, there are some, you know, there is a potpourri of, you know, some emails where Judge Good could have used more professional language in writing with respect to the people who work with him and for him. But that's the issue. So the cost has to figure out whether or not, and I know that you all speak, there seems to be some concern about these anonymous letters, but obviously most judges are only reviewed anonymously. Superior Court, we only get anonymous reviews. So it's not unusual to have an anonymous. If you go before the Judicial Tenure and the Disabilities Commission, they never tell us if there are complaints, if there are concerns. We never know. So the anonymity is, quite frankly, irrelevant to me. Because anonymity does not mean false. It just means anonymous. And so obviously we allow for that anonymity because, you know, it's a way to protect the powerless from the powerful. And whether we like it or not, judges are deemed to be in a powerful position, and we don't want them to be, you know, it's the same with Superior Court. I'm just saying the same thing that has been said to me when I first came onto Superior Court. That is what we are trying to protect against. And so we do have to take these letters quite seriously. And so what is your position as to what the cost should do in terms of considering the concerns, which I think are valid concerns, of people who have worked for and with Judge Good who are not judges, who may be paralegals, who work, you know, who may be paralegals, secretaries, whatever, copy, whatever they are, because everyone who works there obviously is instrumental to making this office work. No one should be deemed better than anyone else. And so how do we deal, how is the cost supposed to deal with that? And then, which is what, that's the chief's concern. The chief has to make sure that everyone is able to work effectively. And apparently, according to several people who have worked with Judge Good, he is not helping to make that happen with respect to the people he works with and who work for him. So,
Can I also add that when you add those comments about professionalism and judgment, and when you look at the Yarner email response, my interpretation is when you are judging credibility, it seems like someone who would write an email like that would also say things that were complained of. So if you could also address that, please.
First of all, where's the evidence of that, Commissioner Wilburn? There isn't any real evidence of that. The email, you're seizing on one episode, interaction with Judge Yonner and Judge Good. Judge Yonner, let me address your posit, the question you posited. What should the cost consider? Well, the first thing the cost should consider is this. There are roughly, by my calculations, 74 people at OAH. 74 people. So the cost should deny reappointment to somebody on the basis, to Judge Good, with his record, on the basis of anonymous complaints that that use vitriolic terms about him themselves. People don't step forward. It's not as if the chief judge called or Ms. Natale called Jess Good in the office, Jess Good in the office, said, listen, somebody has stepped forward and said this about you. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but what's your position on that? Nobody ever heard him on that. It's as if anonymous people, anonymous accusers are given the assumption that they are credible. It's kind of hard to deal with it. It's not as if somebody said to Jess Good, look, Joe, let me back up. It's not as if the chief judge went to the anonymous people and said, anonymous person A, do you mind if I tell Jess Good your name and hear his view? Or it's not as if the chief judge or his investigators went to any of these anonymous people and said, if it's okay with you, I'm going to talk to Judge Good, not use your name, but I want to get his views before I go write my June 20th letter to the cost about this allegation. So I can fully balance my duties as a judge, because the chief judge hears cases from time to time, too. So I can, I've got to make an assessment that the cost is going to listen to. And do you mind, anonymous person A, if one of, what was it, 9 people out of 74 people, some of these people, for all we know, may well have been disciplined because Chief Judge Adams told Judge Good to discipline some people. So what is their credibility? How are we to assess that? But nobody ever asked Jess Good for his position. Nobody ever came to him and said, what about this? What do you have to say about that? It's as if anonymous people get to carry the day. I mean, I thought in 1950 this country got past that with anonymous witch hunts, Red Scares, things like that. And I'm not saying that what the chief judge's letter is descends to a McCarthyistic type tactic, but what I am saying is it leaves a lot of questions unanswered. I'm going to let Jess Good tell you about his reaction with people in the office, with the staff, because there's a lot of positive reaction people. There's the let me also say this before he speaks. In the letter, there's a suggestion made that the chief judge, about, in the chief judge's letter, that Jess Good did not react with appropriate demeanor to a woman who was pregnant, one of his one of the people he works with. When you look at the email exchange, all he's saying is feverish, alleged that she called a fever. All he says, I know you got a feverish mind. It was teasing her. It was just having a jest. Mm-hmm. That is a ground to deny reappointment to Judge Good?
It was hurtful. I think that what, besides the fact that someone I've known as long as I have, you know, wouldn't talk to me before he'd do the letter and said the things he said to me, you say it's not personal. I think it is. I think it's more than just an assessment. We've read this stuff. He uses very sharp language to describe me in the June 20th letter. But putting aside that, I think what troubled me the most was the assertion that I mean to staff. He used a bunch of language. You know, to understand me, I was born and raised in working class suburbs of Detroit. I grew up in auto, in assembly line culture. And nobody on the assembly line is better than anyone else. My father worked in those factories. My uncle, my grandfather, we worked in the factories. And no one is better than anyone else. Whether you're a skilled trade person or you're just putting screws in the door. In fact, in assembly line culture, it's the opposite. Everyone is crucial because the best electrician on earth is not going to ensure that that final car is good if and unless the least skilled person is doing his or her job right. We're all in this together. So I concede I am who I am. Sometimes I'm blunt. Sometimes I'm forceful. That's who I am. I know that. Those are the kinds of things I hope to mitigate, to militate so that people aren't hurt. That's the way I grew up. That's sort of, again, a piece of this auto work culture. But we have to remember that when they talk about, when there's discussion about staff problems, besides the fact, and it's true, the chief talked to me repeatedly about documenting these problems so that his managers could take adverse action against them. So some of those emails you're referring to are at his request. But besides that, we have to keep in mind that the mistakes we're talking about impact the due process rights of the litigants who appear in front of me. And just like the auto workers are trying to get that car out, our goal has to be to give fair hearings to people, to move expeditiously and with justice to a final outcome. And when our office is the result of repeated mistakes that result in due process violations for people where they're not given notice and we're rescheduling hearings or they're not getting final orders or there are a series of problems, it's a big issue. It's what we're here to avoid. It's the history of agents, administrative litigation in the agencies.
But and you're saying that to the extent that you did have any sort of, I'll say, tough response to an employee or an assistant paralegal or anything like that, it was because of a specific work performance issue? To the extent that you do respond that way, it is in response to specific work performance that impedes the due process rights about which you just spoke.
I mean, I'm not a big socializer. I go in my office, I close my door. I do my work. I don't walk up and down the halls and chat with everybody and stop at people's desks or offices. I just sit in my office and do my job. So the extent to which I'm interacting with staff, the extent to which they're frustrated because I may be blunt or forceful, it's about a work-related issue. That's what we're talking about, what happened in this case, what happened in that case. Things where, for instance, giving notice to district government agencies so they can come to a hearing on an unemployment case where I've told them, this is the agency, this is their address, you have to mail a scheduling order to them, and then they don't. And we'll go back and look in the case file, and they'll have the sticky note where I've written it down sitting in the case file. And I'm like, well, what happened? Why didn't we do it here? Because we have to remember, in the example I gave, when unemployed people have to travel to OAH, it costs them money they don't have. So it's not just a due process, though it is. It's also a real fundamental negative impact on litigants who are coming back sometimes three times to get their hearing. That forces people who maybe are collecting benefits and going to be denied, that forces them to, in a position of a large repayment obligation to the Department of Employment Services. If you are given benefits and as an ALJ we decide you're not entitled to them, you have to pay it back. You don't have a job. It's a lot easier to pay back a smaller sum, just sort of by definition, right, than it is to pay back a larger sum. It's very hard on people. You'll have people come in and say, I can't afford the subway. I can't afford the cost it is for me to get here. I'm about to be homeless. And my response is, well, I'm sorry we didn't give notice to the employer, so I can't do your hearing today. Those are the conversations I have with the staff, and those are the problems we identify. Those are the problems we talk through.
So let me ask you, Judge Gooden. You know, I've been on the cost now, I don't know, a few years, and I've done multiple reappointments. We've done multiple, through different iterations of the cost. And no one else has gotten the number of, I'll say, dissenting opinions or dissenting perspectives as you. I don't know that we've even gotten one for anyone else. You've gotten close to 10. So, as you can see, that would raise a red flag for us. So something is going on.
The chief himself said it in the June 20th letter. The divisions from the struggles over Mary Oates Walker's tenure, the divisions from creating the union, have continued. When you read those anonymous letters, that's what they're mostly talking about.
That is likely true, and I agree with that. But I've done multiple reappointments. We just did, Judge Goody is here. We just did her reappointment. She signed that letter with respect to Mary Oates Walker as well. We didn't get any dissenting opinions about her. Similarly, we just recently did Judge Rooney's reappointment. Mm-hmm. We didn't get any dissenting opinions about him. Is it Judge Rooney? I think it is. Or so, maybe it's not Judge Rooney. I can pull up the names if I need to.
Harvey.
But Harvey. I mean, he was a one on that, you know, that letter that we're talking about with respect to. So I'm just saying, there is something about you that we're trying to get to the bottom of and get an understanding of. So I appreciate your statements today, which are very heartwarming. I am also, I was born in Detroit. My family, I have a niece and nephew who work on the assembly line today. So I understand that. I have come from a union family as well. So I get that, and I understand that perspective that you bring, and I appreciate it. But we do need to understand this and get to the bottom of it.
Can I help you something? Can I help you about church? In our record, Exhibit 4B, the unscripted, unsolicited, well, we did ask, I shouldn't say unsolicited, letter of former Chief Judge Tucker, page 8. Let me read this one paragraph.
Page 8.
I just want to read this one paragraph into the record.
Okay.
It is time to end the fighting that has ripped this administrative court to pieces. If Judge Good is not reappointed, those who cannot stop fighting will claim victory and be encouraged, continue to fight, to try to make others pay. And ALJs who have stopped fighting, moved on, and are doing all they can to treat litigants fairly, to participate in management committees and issue orders timely, as Judge Good has done, will have reason to fear for their jobs if they cross the wrong person. There will be charges of union busting and unfair labor practices, as Judge Good is on union organizing committee and elected union president by his colleagues. She asked the court humbly to reappoint Judge Good because he's earned it, because of his work product, his timeliness, and his exemplary work. She stepped forward. She elegantly summarized, better than any lawyer like me could ever do, what Judge Good has done for the district. He has said to you, nobody's perfect, but again, we have addressed the, as best we could, the anonymous claims. I mean, how do you treat anonymous claims? You do your best to learn if you think there's something there, but if nobody ever comes to you and says, what do you think about this? Putting aside the fact that they're anonymous, what do you think about this claim? Well, first of all, how can you address an anonymous claim to somebody's evil, of a devil incarnate? That's a little difficult to do. But if there is a specific thing, then somebody can at least come to you and say, what is it? What do you think led to this? None of that ever happened here. So Judge Good isn't saying to you, I'm perfect in all respects. What he's saying to you is, I've worked hard. I've done everything I can to the best of my ability. My work has been right. Judge Yonner, by the way, was on his 2009 performance evaluations in the record, which gives laudatory remarks about him. So he has done what is to be reasonably expected. What the chief judge has, again, it's very uncharacteristic. I'm not saying it's personal. What I am saying, it doesn't make sense when you analyze the events. And we've gone through them one by one. And I don't want to take up your good time and limited point we have today, the limited period we have today. And I'm sure you'll reflect on that. We have striven to take every jot and tittle that made any sense, or not that it made sense, but made any sense to respond to and address them and show you that there's no merit to them. Yes, Your Honor.
It seems to me that the counter argument, the recommendation that's flown from Chief Judge Adams is that that recommendation lacks credibility, in large part because there have been anonymous letters that have been received in support of the decision not to reappoint. Which implies, of course, then that the general counsel's office and the investigators, as you said in your opening statement, may not have done a thorough job investigating, and that perhaps Chief Judge just wrote the report himself and signed it. And so it appears to me that the heart of the matter is that you believe that there is no evidence to support the decision not to reappoint. And so then I'm just curious, what is the motivation then? What is underlying the recommendation not to reappoint?
As Judge Good said to you, and as I'll say to you now, we've been scratching our head for quite a period of time. This is a friendship and a collegial relationship, as witnessed by the emails and the text exchange. It goes back for many, many years. Nobody could come up, perhaps union issues. That's the one thing that, and that's up before PERB now, but that's one issue. But I like to think of how I handle a case when I deal with a discrimination case. If I have a plaintiff side case, I still do them from time to time in my old age. when you look and see the reasons that are given for a given personnel action, when you examine them carefully, and we try to do that here, Commissioner Hawkins, one by one, we took them, we analyzed them. When they don't add up, when they don't make sense, then you can infer that the decision is irrational. And if you can infer the decision is irrational, sometimes in a Title VII case, you can infer that the real reason is, say, the prohibited reason. All I'm saying is that he has seized on feathers to say that this man acted with discriminatory intent, for heaven's sake, with people in episodes that the chief judge didn't even witness, and yet maintained a perfectly pleasant demeanor over the years and constant pleasant remarks. Does that make sense to you? And I'm not trying to attack the chief judge. I'm simply, and I forswear that. I am simply saying that the reasons that are given, when you analyze them, when you put the microscope under them, they don't add up. And it isn't just that nobody asked him, Judge Good, for his position. It's before releasing that June 20th letter. It's that there's going back to 2005 and taking an isolated remark about a former chief judge who supported his appointment, reappointment, a spoof of North Korea. Please, how is that a ground to reappoint somebody who's toiled in? He was toiled hard for the District of Columbia. Maybe Judge Good hasn't pleased everybody he worked with. But where's the record? Where's the contemporaneous record that his demeanor towards people was so exceptional, so terrible, so bad as to warrant the chief judge to at least call him in the office and say, Jess, what's going on with you? Why aren't you and Anyana getting along? The chief judge, in fact, is reaching out to Anyana and trying to get her, to cooperate. Chief Judge Tucker's letters in the record about her episodes of Anyana. I don't want to assault Anyana, but I don't think Anyana stands on a pedestal here. And Anyana represents perhaps a faction that won't let it go.
But
I'm trying to answer.
A fine point on this. Is it your position, is it Mr. Good's position, Judge Good's position, that this decision is personally motivated?
It's hard to tell. There was certainly no evidence of personal animosity, but what's happened here is the chief judge has, maybe there was something lurking beneath the surface after all this time. But the question you have to ask yourself, look at the statutory criteria. If the reasons that the chief judge has offered are insubstantial, when you carefully analyze them, when you reflect, when you look at the record, if they don't add up, then you should reappoint Judge Good because he's earned it.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm just sorry. Is it my understanding that once the dissenting letters were submitted to OAH, which was in late January, early February, and because there were so many of them, it is my understanding that it is that only at that point that OAH decided to conduct an investigation because they got so many. And so, based upon their investigation, is where the chief judge came out, is why the chief judge, my understanding of he describes in great detail what the investigative process was and what his general counsel's office did. So, when you say that you don't know whether or not it's personal, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, how could I get inside Chief Judge Adams' head, Your Honor?
Well, because we're talking about what the evidence that's in the record. So
well, the evidence.
What's in his head is what's written on the paper, is my understanding. So if you have something different, I would like to know.
Well, sure I do. First of all, who'd they go to? They cite anonymous sources. They don't have 74 people in the office. Mm-hmm. They don't go to the vast majority of them. They go to the people who.
How do you know that?
Because they don't say, they spell out who they go to. Does anybody go to Chief Judge Tucker? Does anybody go to Kathy Haggerty, the woman who was involved in Sheree Cleckley's resignation? Does anybody go to Rachel Lukens? They're all available. They don't go to these people. They list, Chief Judge Adams lists who they went to. As best he's anonymous, largely anonymous, but he cites some other people. Mm-hmm. They don't go to the ALJs who are here in this room and say, what do you think about Jessica? What have you heard about Jessica's interaction with the staff? If you go to people who detract, then you're going to get detracting responses. Some of the people took no position, so how can they say they oppose Jessica? How can they conceivably say they oppose Jessica? They went to a very small segment. There's 74 odd people in that office. You want to add something to the record, Jess? That's good.
I was just going to say that the chief said in the June 20th letter, and it's what he told me before, while this process was ongoing, he was going to talk to the people in the employment cluster. But if you look at the June 20th letter where he identifies the ALJs he talked to, not one of them works in the employment cluster currently. They haven't worked there in the unemployment cases in years. He knew that they didn't like me from the Mary Oates Walker anti-union fights. He knew that.
How do you know that he knew that?
Because, believe it or not, these are actually conversations he and I have had for his tenure here. What are the divisions? How do we heal them? What does it take to get past? I'm not saying every day, and I'm not saying every week, but they're conversations we have had since his name was put forward and before he even came. He knew it because he was at the Office of the Attorney General when all this stuff was happening, and he was involved on behalf of Irv Nathan. So he does have a sense as to that. And, of course, Calnet McDonald signed her letter, so he went to her knowing that she was opposed to me. But again, he said it was going to be employment cluster, and it wasn't. He didn't talk to the judges who work with me to see daily to see what their view was. And that's why I think, you know, I have concerns it wasn't balanced or fair. If you're going to go to the people you know are mad and say, are you mad at Jess? You can't really be surprised they said yes. But go to people, like you said, who work with me every day and just find out what's happening. Have you had problems? Where is this? What's going on in the cluster?
There are two divisions. Mary Oates Walker's side and the other Mary Oates Walker's side. Your example is, go up to anybody on the opposing side and ask them to say a bad word about somebody on the opposite side, and they would do so. Is that accurate, or would most people say, no, I respect that person, they're a colleague, and they do a nice job, I'm not going to say a bad word about them. I disagree with their position on the very Walker case, but personally, I wouldn't say a bad word.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think it depends on the person. You know, I think that to a certain extent, I think the answer is no, because two people who are not in the union signed letters supporting me. So to an extent, it's been years and we're getting past it. And to an extent, it's not. And I think it depends on, you know, are you going to tell anybody what I told you? I think it depends on, you know, are you asking me what do I think? What are you really asking me? Ask me, do I like the person as an individual? Are you asking me, do I think they do a reasonable job as an ALJ? I mean, so the devil's sort of in the details there. But I'm not standing here saying that there's been no healing. And I'm not, and I certainly attribute some of that. It started before he came, but I certainly attribute some of that to Chief Adams. I mean, we've all been, people have been working.
You know, Commissioner Hawkins, it's not to follow up and
Judge Good, is it correct that you did agree to allow Sean Nolan to conduct the investigation, and you were told about it when it was going to begin?
I was told. I wasn't asked anything.
So you didn't agree that?
No.
that the investigation was going to go forward and that Mr. Nola was going to do it capably and fairly?
I was told it was going to go forward. I was told he would do that.
Judge Williams, could I follow up on a matter Commissioner Hawkins observed? Or do you want me to wait till he's back in the room? It might be of some...
Okay, go ahead.
Might be of some help to you in considering this. It's not as if... I've talked a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, about the under-inclusiveness of this investigation, how it appears to have gone to people who wrote adverse statements and anonymous people who we still don't know who they are. But there were a number of people, of administrative judges, and a former administrative judge, Judge Welner, who's now on, sits on the bench, who wrote on behalf of Judge Good. It's not like the investigators ever went to any of them and said, listen, we know you've recommended Judge Good for reappointment. But, you know, we got some questions. What do you have to say about this? What do you have to say about X specifically, who X is, if they want to disclose an anonymous source? Or if they don't, what about this episode? Or what do you think about his behavior, his deportment towards people in the office? That wasn't done. It was a skewed... It was a poorly crafted investigation that went to people who a number of them had an obvious axe to grind based on their writing and have seized on insubstantial episodes over the past 2005. Tyrone Butler, an odd a statement that should hold up Jess Good's reappointment. How could that make any sense to anybody? The North Korean spoof? It doesn't compute. It'd be one thing if they'd gone to all the ALJs and came up with a pretty decent consensus that there were problems here. That didn't happen here. And why should the cost give credibility, give credence to anonymous accusations? Does that seem quite right to you? Would you do that sitting on the bench? I don't think so. So my view of it is, I don't want to belabor the point, is that he's worked really hard. And he said, to the extent there were issues, if Chief Judge Adam feels there were issues, not that he ever called him in to talk about them in the past, he'll be happy to sit down and talk with him. Judge Good isn't looking for continued friction. He's done the best he can, I think, as better than most people in trying to promote harmonious labor relations in this city and trying to have a professionalism, a cadre of administrative law judges who serve the district. And I must say, let me hearken back to 2005, because it's just such a perfect example. This isolated instance that somebody told the chief judge, that who wasn't the chief judge in 2005, that Judge Good made a comment about letting then Chief Judge Butler find his own way with Councilmember Mendelson. That's not only is that, 12 years ago? I can barely remember who was president then. But putting that aside, what was Judge Good trying to do? He was trying to address legislation that ensured the city would have an experienced cadre of administrative law judges serving for a period of time that was longer than council member had proposed, that Mendelson had proposed. And that, in fact, it was adopted. He stood up for little people. He stood up for big people in terms of stood up for anybody who he felt that was wronging the cause of the people he represented. And he shouldn't be punished for that. These examples just don't make sense. If they made sense, I'd come here and say they make sense, but they don't.
I have a question.
Commissioner.
Somebody, and perhaps it's just good, could somebody explain to me what the relationship is between the collective bargaining agreement and the proposed appointment of a principal administrative law judge for what I think is a new section and information systems and technology. Why is this the collective bargaining agreement involved in that, and how is it involved?
With your permission, I'll lateral it to my client, Commissioner Honor.
The collective bargaining agreement, and I don't have it right in front of me, but the collective bargaining agreement talks about under the Labor Management Committee, there's a list of things that the chief or management has to bring to the union before implementing through the Labor Management Committee, so that there's just a conversation, a dialogue. And the it was our position in the union, not Just Goods, but the unions, that creating the new PALJ for Info Systems and then selecting someone to go in, and I'm sorry, that's the other thing. So you've got the Labor Management Committee that defines what the parties are supposed to talk about. And then in a separate section, article, there's language about how principal administrative law judges are selected. So what we said as a union to the chief was we think that the announcement of this new position and the placement of Judge Yonner into it violates those two provisions of the collective bargaining agreement, and we'd like to have a meeting to talk about it. It was from that meeting that he agreed, and then I think it was on December 16th, it was the day after the meeting, he sent an email and said, you know, I was gently and professionally told, informed, whatever the exact language is, I'm sorry, that when I did this, I violated the collective bargaining agreement, and, you know, I'm going to rescind it. I've talked to Judge Yonner. Everybody understands, and we're going to do it the right way, in essence. But it's those two provisions of the collective bargaining agreement, labor management and PALJ.
And what's happened since, from your perspective or from the union's perspective?
Well, on I think it was April 5th. So the union had done significant research because this position goes to case management, both electronic database and just sort of how you shuffle paper, in essence, the administration of cases. So we did research, including talking to a former clerk of OAH who has moved on and has worked through at least two other court systems and is identified, I think, as an expert by National Association of Court Managers or something. I'm sorry. And to figure out what's really the best way. Everyone, and at that meeting, it came up from Ms. Natale. This is December when we tell them we want to meet to talk about this. This is anti-Ann Yonner. You guys, it's all going to come across as anti-Ann Yonner. We didn't want that to be the case. So we tried to step back from that and say, how do you really do this in a way that's viewed by the professionals as best practices? And that's the research we did. So I think it was April 5th. We sent an email to the chief outlining what we'd learned, telling him we think under the collective bargaining agreement we have formal rights. We don't want to exercise them. We just want to have a conversation about what's best for OAH. And I've never heard back.
And some of this is in the record.
All of it.
Unfortunately, I'm a technological neophyte, so I didn't fully understand. But I gather there are debates about what are the best systems to use and which ones work and don't work.
Right. Right. What was interesting is, you know, a lot of us complain about our specific database, eCourt. This guy that I talked to was favorable towards eCourt. That surprised me. I mean, we learned important and substantive things. He said, oh, no, eCourt's very flexible. You can work with that. I'm familiar with it. Talked about some preliminary steps we should engage in before we make these formal decisions about how. And the thrust of it becomes, do you design systems to address your database, or do you design your database to address the systems you have in place? What's driving what? And right now, many people thought eCourt, the database, was driving the way we designed the court processes, the management of paper. And this guy was saying, well, I think you need to step back from that. Look at what your critical system needs are for case management, and then design your court database to reflect those needs. And that's what it boiled down to. So that's why, again, our goal was to get away from a conversation about Ann Yonner.
Thank you.
I just want to ask, since this whole process has begun, obviously there have been multiple calls, multiple emails, back and forth. But I did want to get on the record and confirm, or maybe lack of confirm, did you or someone you know or work with or who works for you or related to you contact some newspaper in Ms. Natale's hometown?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Did you or someone you work with or who someone on your behalf contact some newspaper in Miss Natalie's hometown?
Not on my behalf. I didn't talk to a reporter. I didn't ask anyone to talk to a reporter. I didn't transmit any documents to a reporter. I didn't ask anyone to transmit documents to a reporter.
So you're saying that you did not initiate whatever that contact was?
Absolutely not.
Do you know who did?
Do I know who initiated? I do not.
Let me add, I echo my client's words. It came as a surprise to me, too.
Did you just, well, one last question, just was, did you contact the chairman of the city council or someone on your behalf?
The union, the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers contacted.
I just wanted to be clear on how information is getting dispensed and back to me.
Was that communication about whether Mr. Onyx, Commissioner Onyx, term had expired?
No.
Was it about the substance of this?
It was about the substance of this. I only learned after the fact that Mr. Onyx's term had expired. That was news to me.
Yeah, same here. That letter from what we saw yesterday was just a complete surprise about Commissioner Onyx. We assumed he was. We've been sending him pleadings all along, assuming he's on the commission, on the cost.
Well, just for the record, that all of that has to be resolved. I felt that I should be here and participate in case.
And we're delighted.
Furthermore, the chairman has indicated that I will be reappointed, so at some point I will be here, though. I am in a somewhat awkward position, but I am here, and in the end I decided to ask a question, and whatever.
All right. Are there any additional questions, concerns? Does anyone from OAH have anything to add to the materials that they've provided, that you all have provided?
Yes, Commissioner, just very briefly, we're not going to take up much time with this. Just wanted to just address a couple of points. We obviously won't go into the facts of any things that happened here. The record is extensive. It's voluminous. OAE stands by the record. We believe that the allegations and the charges that levied by the Chief Administrative Law Judge are substantially and completely backed up by the evidence, so there's really no need for us to go into those things. A couple of the commissioners have addressed the anonymity aspect of the letters that came in. We just want to say very briefly, it's a very simple analogy if you consider it. It's no different than a call center. If someone calls into a call center and says there's an issue, there's an obligation to take a look at it. You know, our resource center fields calls every day, some of them from litigants, some of them from lawyers or whatever. Someone calls into our resource center, one of our clerks gets that call, and they say, I believe your deputy general counsel is stealing computers. There's an obligation on the part of the organization, of the agency, to investigate that. They go and do an inventory, all the computers are there, it's no problem. If they go and a bunch of computers are missing, they do a little survey of the video, and they say that Deputy General Counsel Neal has a coat a little bigger than it should be. Things are missing, and there it is. It's no different than what we did here. These anonymous letters are simply a catalyst. In and of themselves, they have no substance, but they led to the fire where the smoke was coming from. Simple as that. We talked about, you know, Judge Yonner's issue. It wasn't just one issue. You know, there were a number of people that were interviewed, a number of people that were affected by Judge Good's behavior. And these are real people that were hurt, real people that were scared. So just because he doesn't have a name to every one of these people, we know who those people are. And if the commission wanted to speak with those people, some of them are willing to talk. I believe that esteemed counsel referred to the Chief Administrative Law Judge's actions here as Rip Van Winkle-ish of some sort. Actually, if you put it into perspective, maybe he's not too wrong about that. I mean, if Rip Van Winkle, if that analogy means that maybe the chief was not aware of certain things, he's right. the chief initially had no issue recommending Judge Good for reappointment based on what he knew about Judge Good. I don't know how extensive or to what degree that 25-year relationship with went, but he certainly had no problem with him based upon his work, which no one has had taken any issue with. But when he began to see the results of the investigation from Mr. Nolan, when he began to see the emails, when he began to see the evidence, when he began to see that a lot of the allegations, a lot of the accusations had merit, that there was substance to them, what was he to do? Ignore it? And say, yo, you know what? Me and Jeff been friends 25 years, whatever, you know what? Good guy, does good work, ignore it. Absolutely not. We'd be sitting here in another hearing if he had done something like that. He had no choice but to do his job. Judge Good has implied that, you know, doing his job may sometimes entail a little bit of tough love. Understand that. I'm a former military person, so I understand that sometimes you have to be tough, got to kick a little butt to get things done sometimes, but the Office of Administrative Hearings is not a military. They're real people, civilians. We have rights to be treated with dignity and integrity. So to the extent that things have to get done and the citizens of the District of Columbia have to be served, then we do that. And we do that the best we can. But we do that always aware that we have to respect the integrity and the dignity of every single person we come in contact with, not just the litigants, not just the lawyers who represent those litigants, but the people that you work with, your colleagues, the people who you're supposed to be in battle with. So to the extent that we undertook this very hard and very challenging undertaking, nobody got any enjoyment out of doing this, including myself. I'm named in it. Judge Good could attest to the fact that he and I have had a great relationship over the last year or so. It is not personal, but it happened. It happened with me. It happened with all the other people that were named in the complaint. It happened with those anonymous people who are real people. It happened, and it can't be taken back. And it's simply a day of reckoning. Now, to the extent that the commission has that ultimate choice to make, we've given you everything that we think you need to do it. We stand by that, you know, we're delighted to give you any other additional information. Also, one other point. Counsel spoke about maybe the unequal representation of those who oppose Judge Good as opposed to those who support him. I take issue with that simply because those people who support Judge Good have had quite an opportunity to say what they wanted to say. And they said it, quite frankly, beyond the comment period. February 5th, 2017 was the end of comments. We have received many comments from people who have supported Judge Good after that time, and we never objected to any one of them. So to the extent that there have been supporters of his who have had their opportunity to have their say and to have their perspectives heard by the commission, that has been done. This investigation was done fairly. It was done in good faith, it was done properly, and it was done as thoroughly as we possibly can. To the extent that Judge Good was told that we would do an investigation, he was advised that an investigation would take place. And it is my understanding that we also advised him that if he was uncomfortable with that, we could contract it out to another agency. He was fine with that. And if he wasn't fine with it, it went on for 6 weeks, 2 months. He never raised an objection to it, not to me. I don't know if he raised it to any of the commissioners. I don't think he raised that objection to anyone, either in writing or orally. Judge Good is an accomplished lawyer and ALJ. I don't think he's the type of person who's going to get run over and steamrolled without objection. If he had a problem with it, he could have said something. Anything else that we can help you with, commissioners, we're happy to do so. That's all Office Administrative. That's all we have to say about it. Thank you.
May I make a brief rebuttal, Your Honor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Neal, for commending Judge Good on his accomplishments. Let me address 5 points that Mr. Neal made. The need for anonymity. The need for anonymity collapses when one inspects it, because why did these people not come forth till now if it was something that bad, that terrible in the way Jess treated them? Why did we just suddenly come forward?
Because we're at the reappointment stage for Jess Good.
If way Judge
Good, my understanding of why they came forward.
But if it was that serious, Your Honor, mm-hmm. Let's think. Actions speak louder than words. If Jess Good, Judge Good, had mistreated somebody, really mistreated somebody, 3-4 years ago, why didn't they come forth? Why did nobody come forth? Why is it all of a sudden now? Secondly, anonymity, as I said before, why not do what Ms. Natale promised Jess Good would happen? Sit down with him before writing you and saying, what do you have to say about this? If not the person, at least the episode, at least the event. Or why not go to the ALJs and say, what do you have to say? You ever hear anything about this? Well, you know anything about this? None of that happens. Secondly, Mr. Neal said that the chief had no issue based on what he knew. And that's right, he had no issue based on what he knew. And that state of affairs continues today, because the chief judge has no personal knowledge about these events that occurred in 2005, 2007, 2014. It wasn't the chief judge, he wasn't involved. The people who were involved, nobody ever went to them. That was Mr. Neal's last point. Rachel Lukens, nobody ever went and asked her what was going on. Nobody ever went to former Chief Judge Tucker and asked her about episodes that went on during her administration, personnel decisions that she undertook. Nobody asked her questions about that. Nobody said, Wanda, what do you have to say about this? Or Chief Judge Tucker, however they call her, just could a bigot? Nobody did anything like that. So they said also the Chief Judge had no choice but to, Mr. Neal said the Chief Judge had no choice but to do his job. I agree with that, but he had a choice. He could have sat down with Judge Good and said, I don't know anything about this. What's your, these allegations, what's your position on this before I unleash that June 20th letter? That was just most ungentlemanly, which surprised, uncharacteristically ungentlemanly, but it's just not professional to run an investigation that way. Putting aside everything else, Judge Good was okay letting him run an investigation. They want to investigate, that's fine. He's got nothing to hide. He's come forward here today. He's bared his soul in the pre-hearing statements. But why not give somebody the decency, the grace of coming before them and getting their position before you commit yourself in black and white to a body like this, making accusations that don't hold up? The North Korean letter, that's a basis to deny reappointment. I had to keep coming back to that, but that should give you an idea of the quality of the thinking that goes beyond that's out there, that's the grounds. This has been a humiliating and humbling experience in a lot of respects for Judge Good. Perhaps there were people that weren't happy about him. Bear in mind also, he's the union president. You don't always make all the people happy all the time. He's been a terrific administrative law judge. He's committed to continuing to do so and to do all that he can to meet with Gene Adams and make sure that the path forward is smooth for everybody. He's here to serve the District of Columbia. That's what we're here for, the people. That's who those are whose cases he adjudicates. Those are people he's at the focal point of adjudication of cases and dispensing justice. There's no dispute over that. And so there are isolated episodes where not everybody was happy. That should not be a basis to deny reappointment. That's insubstantial. And before I close, I just want to ask my client if he has any last remarks.
I mean, it has been humbling and humiliating for me. This has been very difficult to hear people that I work with. Of course, you know, we don't know that all the anonymous letters are current employees. They may be former employees. But it doesn't matter, current or former, people who I think must know me because the way the letters are written, it's not easy. It's hurtful to see people talk about me like that.
Let me ask you this, Judge Good. Let's say, by chance, we don't go with the recommendation of the Chief Judge. What is your commitment, other than to talk and work with Chief Judge? As I said, I don't think there's an issue between you and the Chief. The issue is far greater than you and the Chief. What is your commitment to working in this office?
My commitment to working in this office is doing everything possible to heal the divisions that have separated us and to treat people with dignity and respect. So the extent to which anyone, and the chief could help with this, the extent to which anyone of the people who have not been identified to me want to have a conversation, I would like to talk to them and try and reach some common ground and create a situation where everybody's comfortable going forward. I have no interest in going to work every day and being stressed out and struggling with people. And I can understand that no one wants to come to work and feel the same way as they interact with me. And the chief could help. It would help across the, not just me, the whole office needs that kind of intervention, but I would gladly sit down with anyone, whether it's directly under the chief's auspices or someone he asked to do it. I'll talk to anyone. I'll take responsibility if I've hurt their feelings, if I've done something inappropriately. I don't have a problem with that. I have no interest in all these battles, none. And if somebody says to me, well, you know, when you talk to me this way, I thought you were talking down to me, then I'll make a commitment not to do that.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you all very much. The meeting will be adjourned at this time.
Thank you.
Technical people problems to the point of, is there something we can address?
Not today. We'll address that at a later hearing.
Okay, thank you.